Good morning. Thanks for tuning in to 88.5 KRFY. This is Panhandle Community Radio, and it's Thursday, March 24th. We're live in the studios for the Thursday edition of the KRFY Morning Show. I'm Susie Prez and co-host.
I'm Chris Bessler. Good morning, Susie.
Good morning, Chris. And we're kind of here in place of Jack for a special reason, because we have a special guest with us.
And because I think Jack's out of town.
Yeah, he's not here, so we're taking over.
That's also a good reason right there.
Yeah, it's definitely a good reason. And do you want to introduce our guest?
Yes, we have with us today Bonner County Commissioner Todd Sudik. Commissioner Sudik, say hello.
Thank you, Chris. Thanks, Susie. It's a pleasure to be here. This should be an informative show this morning, and I hope I can pass on some information that will be of value.
Exactly. And the main subject we want to talk about, actually, is what's going on with the County Planning Department. But, of course, we'd like to get filled in on other things that are happening with the county commissioners as well. So we'll have hopefully a good hour or 50 minutes at least of discussion.
And before we get to that, which is really exciting that we're really happy you came in today, Todd. The weather from the National Weather Service. Currently, we are under a flood advisory. I'm not sure exactly what that means, but pay attention to those creeks that are filling up with rain. Currently, it's 38 degrees outside. Today, we can expect showers with highs near 45, southwest winds 6 to 11 miles per hour. And the chance of precipitation is 90%. Although I just looked at the sky and there were blue sections, so we may even get a little bit of sunshine in between the rain. Tonight, 30% chance of rain, low 32. That could be snow in higher elevations. And tomorrow, 40% chance of rain, snow, then chance of showers, high 47. And Friday night, low of 30, partly cloudy. That's about it.
Yes.
Oh, Saturday. I might as well say the good news. Mostly sunny, high 48. Just like last Saturday.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, that sounds good.
Yeah.
Last Saturday and Sunday were beautiful spring days. We'll take that anytime.
Absolutely.
And what else is going on around town briefly, Susie, before we get into the topic
of the day?
Well,
we had an exciting news last night that was coming over the internet through Facebook. The Sandpoint Police Department issued a notice or a warning to residents to stay in place because they were in pursuit of some fugitives from southern Idaho. And I don't know the current status. I looked this morning and could not find an update.
Apparently there are a couple that's suspected in a murder case. Yes, police were warning folks to be on the lookout and actually to lock their doors. And I do know that they were talking to residents specifically around the Grouse Creek area. And that's all the information we have on that. But folks, keep your heads up. The Sandpoint Reader on their Facebook page does have some information about this. It's a breaking news story.
Okay.
And also, this week is Easter week. A lot of the churches have some special services going on. And as well, there's the big Easter egg hunt at Memorial Field.
Lots of candy. Not parents' favorite thing, but the children love it.
Yeah, and actually the Easter eggs that the kids hunt for are the candy eggs. The old days where they boiled thousands and thousands of Easter eggs, those are in the rearview mirror now. The Easter egg hunt starts at 10 a.m. That's Saturday at Lakeview Park for any parents that want to get out there with their kids. Don't be late. It's more of an Easter egg race than a hunt. Those kids work pretty fast. So be there before 10 if you're going to bring your child. Also, there is a second Easter egg hunt at the Bridge Assisted Living on Saturday. And that happens at 11 a.m. So there are two Easter egg hunts out there that the public's invited to. And, of course, there's a lot of other things going on in our town, as usual. There's a very packed event calendar. Towards the end of the show, hopefully we can have a little bit of time to talk about some of the things coming up this week on the community calendar. And of course, you can always look at our calendars on krfy.org or sampleonline.com. Be informed. Take part in the things going on in town.
Before we get going, if you're driving to work right now and you're hoping to hear this interview, this informative interview with our Bonner County Commissioner Todd Sudik, and you have to go into work, fear not. You can listen to the podcast. We are recording this, and you can listen to the podcast on krfy.org. Later in the day, we'll have that up. And so you can stay informed.
And that's on our podcast page on the krfy.org website. And so with that, let's introduce again Bonner County Commissioner Todd Sudik. Todd, thanks for being here again.
I'm really pleased to be here, Chris, and be able to answer any questions you have.
So the topic is the what's going on with the planning department. And I want to talk about the specifics of some of the actions that have come down over the past several months. And we'll have some questions. Actually, we have a number of questions that were submitted by the public, so we'll pass on some of those to you. But I'd like to kind of also, sometime in the show, get into the kind of the bigger overarching question of what should be the role of land use planning. I mean, there's a philosophical question there that probably goes to the heart of all the decision making. But let's start out with what's going on right now. So there have been some changes in the planning department. The assistant planner and the planning director both left the department. They were discharged, as I understand. As well as in February, the Planning Commission Chair Steve Temple resigned. And a major point of contention seems to be that it pertains to amending the county code concerning the appeal of land use decisions. So, Todd, I'd like to turn the microphone over to you and just give us the thumbnail sketch in your view about what's going on with the planning department.
Absolutely. Chris, before I get to those points that you mentioned, I would like to say that forgotten in a lot of this, where the attention gets focused on the commissioners, excuse me, and their actions, I would like to acknowledge the county employees, the 380 county employees that work very hard every day to ensure that the county does run in an efficient manner, and that our police, our sheriff's department, all the employees in the road department and so forth, and ensure that the roads are clear, that they're maintained, that our public safety is, they somehow get dropped out of the equation. And I want to make sure, they're great people. I work with them every day. And I want to acknowledge the county employees. Moving on to land use planning. First of all, I would like to go back to state statute, and state statute says that as we go through our planning processes, that we provide for a review. Now, there were a large number of changes to planning back in 2007, 2008, and those have not been reviewed up to this point. The commissioners took a look at it and said this was an opportunity to review and to see what worked and what didn't work from the changes that took place back in 2007 and 2008. In terms of changes, sometimes changes are difficult to accept. People take ownership of certain parts of the land use codes, our comp plan, and any ideology or philosophy that goes with it. And so We, in the process of making changes, knew that there would be some challenges in terms of not necessarily selling these changes, but making them in a way that would benefit Bonner County. So the process of making changes and the ownership that some people have taken on it obviously has caused some disagreement. You mentioned that Mr. Temple resigned, and that was a philosophical difference between he and the Bonner County commissioners in terms of the changes that we were trying to make. So I guess that could be applied to our planning and zoning department also, and that there were some philosophical differences there. And by the way, just so your listeners understand, the planning and zoning department is under and the department heads are under the Bonner County Commissioners, like the Road Department or any of the other departments.
They're employees of the county.
They're employees of the county. So they
work for the commissioners.
Exactly. Right. So that ought to be brought out. I think some people don't understand that that's kind of a standalone group, and that is not the case. I think another thing that maybe we should address is that the Planning and Zoning Commission is an advisory committee appointed by the commissioners. State statute allows for us to have a Planning and Zoning Commission. It does not require us to have one. Bonner County chooses to have one, but again, they're appointed by your elected officials, the commissioners, and they are an advisory committee to the commissioners. They do not have power to pass ordinances, subdivisions. They are only required to be included in the conversation when we get to zoning or we get to the comp plan, and that's required by state statute. Of course, we value their opinion, and we would like to work closely with them on developing what we see are some necessary changes to current Title 11, Title 12, comp plan, and zoning. As it stands right now, some of the changes we've made are really procedural changes. We don't understand necessarily the concerns about procedural changes. And I'll take one, which we made early on. It's 12-214. And that 12-214, actually the way it was written, violated state statute. It gave the Planning and Zoning Commission de facto ordinance approval authority. The only group that has ordinance approval authority is the commissioners. And so in consultation with our civil attorneys, who agreed that was not really in accordance with state statute, we did change that. And what 214 said at the local level was that planning and zoning made recommendation to the commissioners, but we could not take action on an ordinance until they made that recommendation. Well, if you take that out a little bit, extend that thought, they could never make a recommendation, and therefore we could never make a decision on an ordinance. Well,
taken to its extreme,
exactly.
If you had that sort of case come up,
exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, we want a recommendation. When we don't get a recommendation within, it was 30 days. We've made that 10 now, and that's their decision, their recommendation. Then we could never make a decision on an ordinance. Well, that basically violated. It was de facto approval authority. They could hold up our ability to make a decision on an ordinance indefinitely. And so we made that change. We didn't find there should be any conflict with that. It's a procedural ordinance. In terms of 12-262, which generated some concerns, I guess the one that I heard the most was that it would increase the number of appeals to the county commissioners. We didn't see it that way.
Can I back up just a second?
Sure.
What you referred to 12-262, but can you tell us what that is, what the text is there?
It was an appeals process that right. if you're turned down by planning and zoning, you have the right to appeal to the county commission.
If I'm looking for a variance or a conditional use permit. All right.
For instance, one that we just decided was an shingle mill, as that was
the
talked
Cedar
about
case.
In the paper,
yes. Mm-hmm.
The branch. We decided that it did comply with county code, and so we decided to approve that.
You upheld their appeal.
We upheld their appeal.
Yes.
So I think those that would say that we should always listen to the Planning and Zoning Commission can't have it both ways, because they might be in a situation where they would have to appeal to the Planning and Zoning Commission. And if we would follow their reasoning, then we would only go along with everything the Planning and Zoning Commission says. The way it's set up, though, with the commissioners, who are your elected representatives, the buck stops with us. So if you do have a difference of opinion, you can come to us and have that opportunity to appeal, and maybe we see it your way. Maybe we don't.
In which case, the landowner can try to get you out of office, right?
I mean, that's
the accountability part.
The accountability part is the polls. Yeah. You go to the poll and you say, we don't want you in there anymore, basically. Yeah. The voters decide.
So 12-262, the decision there was for commissioners rather than planning commissioners to hear appeals and decide appeals.
Well, actually, what it was it removed some of the reasons that we could overturn a decision by we defined five reasons that we had to hold to those five reasons to overturn a decision by planning and zoning. That really doesn't apply to our decision making directly here at the county. It is a standard by which the courts make determination if it should go to court. But what it did was limit our opportunity to grant variances and to hear appeals that we thought we necessarily should hear. That caused some concern, but we fully vetted that with our civil counsel, and we feel that we're on solid ground with that.
So, just briefly, what you're saying originally is the code, the state statutes were not reviewed for a long time, and the commissioners, through the process of reviewing, have found places where there need to be some revising.
Well, it wasn't that the state statute hadn't been reviewed. Mm-hmm. It was that our current Title 11, Title 12 zoning and comp plan had not been reviewed.
Okay.
Not the state statutes. Of course, as a county, we fall under sometimes we feel a little too rigid, but we fall under state statute in terms of how we operate the county, whether it's how we apply the budgetary process, whether it's land use planning, Title 67. Whatever it is, we have to follow state statute. So all the counties in the state of Idaho fall under state statute when it comes to certain things. So,
There's a lot of different questions asked concerning details of this, but let's go back into the structure of planning in the county just a bit. So we have a paid professional planning department staff, and their role is to handle different sorts of permittings and making sure that people are complying with the county land use regulations. Above them is a planning commission, and this is, as you mentioned, an appointed advisory group. You told a little bit about what their the powers of the planning commission are. They're only required to include to consider zoning questions. But can you describe what the planning commission's role is?
Okay, just to clarify one thing: the planning and zoning department, above them are the county commissioners.
Okay, right.
Off to the side,
you're their bosses.
Yeah,
right.
There's a loop there. Depending on what is in decision making process, above the planning and zoning are the commissioners. So they would refer, to get back to your second point, they would. If you make an application for a conditional use permit, for instance, as Shingle Mill, which is, of course, out in the press, did, they would review it for completeness. They would review it for conformity to our code and to our comp plan and zoning ordinances. And then they would make recommendation along with that application after they've had a chance to vet that with the applicant, and maybe there's some changes that are made relative to their input. That would go to the Planning and Zoning Commission, and they would look at it only in how it applies to our code. They are not there to make policy. In other words, if someone feels that they have environmental concerns or other things that are not specifically addressed in the code, and by the way, our code is already written to address environmental concerns, sometimes fairly stringently. Mm-hmm. So they would review it as it pertains to Title 11, Title 12, and then they would make a decision whether or not it met those requirements. And at that point, their decision would be handed to the applicant. Now, the applicant, if he didn't feel that the decision was favorable or he felt that the additional restrictions that were being required were too restrictive, can appeal that to the county commissioners, which, in fact, happened. And of course, we felt that it did comply. And another case, which, of course, it was out in the press, was an asphalt plant down in Sagal. Mm-hmm. And the Planning and Zoning Commission felt that the change to industrial zone met the code. And once it came to us, we looked at it and said, well, it did not meet the requirements of an industrial zone because there are certain requirements. You have to have sewage, which they didn't. You have to have water, which they didn't. Now, their answer to it was to haul in a porta potty and a water truck. So there were certain aspects of the decision that were contravened in our code. So we made the decision to overturn the Planning and Zoning Commission at that point. So that's the dynamic that exists. And again, it's a recommendation only. I want to stress that because sooner or later,
the Planning Commission is a recommendation.
It's only a recommendation, exactly. So
any recommendation by the Planning Commission on any request would eventually be looked at by the commissioners for final approval. So say the landowners.
Well, I'd like to correct you there.
Is that right?
If it's appealed, yes. I mean. Uh-huh. If okay. someone applies for a subdivision, now subdivisions cannot be approved by planning and zoning. That has to come to the planning. That has to come to the commissioners. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, they don't have that. Ordinances have to come to the commissioners.
So it's an interpretation of the code that the commission really is looking at these requests, looking at the code to see if they meet. Meet up.
That's what we base our decision on if it comes to our level, mm-hmm. either through appeal or through a statutory requirement that applies to the commissioners to make that decision, such as subdivision.
Mm-hmm.
That has to be approved by the commissioners. If we look at a subdivision and we see flaws, we can say, listen, we don't agree with this because, again, it's within our purview to make that decision. So it's not a straight line decision-making process where everything comes to us.
So in the case of the concrete or whatever it was, asphalt thing in Sagal, they had a request and the commission said it looks like it meets code. Then what happened?
It was brought to us. And
an appeal.
We disagreed yeah. with them.
Mm-hmm. Who appealed it? I mean, was it? How did you know about it?
Well, we know about it because it was a fairly contentious situation with the surrounding landowners. So mm-hmm. that was brought. We held a hearing. All parties were there.
So someone requested a
the
hearing.
Neighbor. Yes, the okay. neighbors were there. Interstate Concrete was there. The property owner was there. Who owned the gravel pit? We reviewed it, and of course, we get a binder with that. We have an opportunity to really sit down and look at things and compare it and have in our own minds individually so that when we come in as a commission, as three commissioners, we're educated on it. And I think that we felt it did not meet the code.
Basically, the main change that's taken place, or one of the main changes that's taken place right now, is that appeals, rather than going to the Planning Commission, now come directly to the County Commission.
Well, what happened was we removed the five reasons why we could overturn it. We could overturn the Planning Commission. And we removed those because, and by the way, I would add that we're not the only county that has removed it. Ada County, for instance, which is, of course, the largest county in the state and is under much closer scrutiny than we are in many ways because of their geographic location and size, removed them also, as well did other counties. So that we're not unique in this. We're not doing something that is out of school in terms of how we're trying to streamline the process. And really, it's a streamlining of the appeals process. The concerns that were expressed were concerns that we understood that, you know, maybe, and I stress that maybe there would be an increase in the number of appeals because the appeals process was streamlined. We felt that that was a reasonable, I guess, risk, if we were going to couch it in those terms. That would increase our workload, but then that's what we get paid for. That's what we're elected for, is to be responsive to the citizens of Bonner County, which we are very attuned to, and we try to meet their needs and their concerns. And this was part of it. How do we do that in a way? How do we change things if we're doing a review to streamline things, to make it less onerous, less cumbersome? I would say that Title 12214 and 12262 were only two, and they were procedural, by the way, ordinances that we changed recently. We had some Title 11 changes that generated some interest that were back a ways that streamlined the process, made it less cumbersome and less expensive for people, for instance, to build a shop on their property up to 1,000 square feet. So before it used to be you could only build 400 square feet in a shop or now building without a building location permit, which is a cumbersome process with all the agency reviews and so forth, and a little more expensive. We upped that to 1,000. We felt that was a reasonable building that people ought to be able to build without going through a complete building location permit process. And that was received very well throughout the county, by the way. All of my constituents and other folks that I talk to are very much in support of that. Another one, and there were a lot of little things buried in there that we looked at. Another one we changed was the requirement for a building location permit before you could bring power to your property. But if you read that ordinance even a little further, if you wanted to upgrade your electrical system on your house, you would have to have a building location permit. Well, as you know, electrical is state. That's a state permit. For you to change a 100-amp panel to a 200-amp panel in order to accommodate the installation of a air conditioner, mm-hmm. for instance, some high-load item.
Stove.
Dryer. Dryer, whatever. Mm-hmm. You have to get a building location permit. Seemed a little bit onerous in terms of mm-hmm. where the county
actually is. Now, is that still subject to state review, though, right?
Well, no.
No, it's not.
The state, you have to have an electrical permit in order to upgrade your service. Okay, so if you are changing out that panel, you'd hire an electrician to come in and do that. Most people would. And as a result, you'd need to have an electrical permit, which you would get from the state. If you are changing your plumbing, of course, you need a plumbing permit. Mm-hmm. So that's just – or building a new house, by the way. So we looked at those. These are the types of things we're looking at to kind of filter out that makes it – less of a cumbersome process to do what you want with your property. And I think the overriding issue here that we try to look at is and keep in perspective is property owner rights.
Right. Okay, so I'm going to ask you a question that was submitted by one of our listeners. It concerns the Title 12. Revisions can now happen at a quicker pace because it's more streamlined. Say you and the other current commissioners are sensible about these changes. Due to the amount of power now centralized on the commissioner's office, what happens if someone is elected who makes irresponsible revisions and basically ignores public input? Wouldn't it be good to preserve more of a public process for that possibility in the future.
This doesn't change any public input. This doesn't change the process. This doesn't center more power on the commissioners, by the way. The process, the appeals process, is an appeals process that's provided for. It just streamlines that process. And it also makes it easier for the commissioners and less cumbersome for the commissioners to make decisions and to grant variances. We've always had the opportunity to grant variances. We've always had the opportunity to make decisions. I've lived here for 35 years. I've seen commissioners come and go in that 35 years. I didn't always agree with their decision-making. That's a part of the electoral process. In other words, if someone gets in there and doesn't make reasonable decisions, of course, the electorate has the opportunity to get them out of office.
Fire them.
But nothing, I don't know that the understanding of the existing process is in that question, because we are always the last line. We are always that. And the folks that are concerned, of course, are maybe someday going to be in a position to have an opportunity to use us as an appeal process. So that doesn't center more power on us, by the way. Mm-hmm. We're still statutorily limited. And so I don't quite understand where that question is coming from.
Okay.
We want to remind our listeners, this is 88.5 KRFY. This is the Thursday edition of The Morning Show. Chris Bessler, Susie Prez are your hosts. And our guest today is Bonner County Commissioner Todd Sudik. And we're reviewing the planning and zoning situation. And we'll probably have a little bit of time to go into a few other things. And
To push on here, Todd, you brought up the question of private property rights, and that's kind of like the core question here. And it brings up the broader question about, you know, what should be the role of land use planning. On the one hand, it's a well accepted premise, I think, by just about everybody that a property owner has rights to do what he or she wants to with their property. But sometimes a landowner wants to do things with their property that conflicts with the common good. And that's the common good. That's something that can be hard to define in a way that everybody agrees with. But I think there are some cases that everybody would agree. I think everybody would agree that public health considerations are paramount. Homeowners shouldn't be allowed to build homes with inadequate or no sewage disposal. Once upon a time when we had zero regulation of building, people would do cesspools to take care of their sewage. That, of course, created some serious public health concerns. Another case I think everybody would agree with is that developers shouldn't be allowed to build homes with faulty electrical systems that could cause fires. And, of course, the common good extends to some environmental concerns as well. Landowners shouldn't be allowed to pollute our waterways or our lakes, because that's polluting a resource that's held in common for all people to use. So I guess my philosophical question to you would be, so how do you see the conflict between private property rights and this question of having land use codes that protect the common good?
You've made some good points, Chris, in terms of the environment. I think that seems to be a common thread in a lot of discussions on this. I'd like to start out by saying that 72% of all the residents in Bonner County live in unincorporated areas. They don't live in Sandpoint. They don't live in Old Town. They don't live in Hope. They don't live in Ponderay. They live in the county, unincorporated. And the ordinances that we come up with affect those residents. We don't have any empowerment over Sandpoint, for instance. They have their own set of building codes and so forth. So I want to get that out there, that there's a large population out there that lives in the county.
Mm-hmm. Most of the county falls under the county purview, yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So relative to that, if you look at some issues of the environment, for instance, 63% of all the land in Bonner County will never be built on, because it's either Forest Service, IDL, or it's BLM land. And so that's a set aside that you have to keep in the back of your mind when you talk about, you know, you try to infer that the 20 years from now, 30 years from now, Bonner County is going to look like L.A., for instance. I hear that
Seattle,
sometimes,
right,
to Seattle or King County or something. When it comes to environmental concerns, and you mentioned sewage, in order to have sewage outside the county, which doesn't have services, it doesn't have water, it doesn't have sewage treatment, any concerns about your sewage disposal will be handled by Panhandle Health, which is a quasi-state agency. And so you have to have a permit from Panhandle Health. That's not a county permit, so we don't issue those permits. Just like we don't issue electrical permits, which, of course, you know, some people make modifications to the electrical system without a permit or without, you know, the opportunity for someone who has expertise to be involved. And so we can't, the county can't oversee that. I mean, if your house burns down because you put in bad wiring, that's not something that we take care of. That's a state electrical inspection. And in terms of pollution, we try to mitigate, and of course, water is a huge component in Bonner County. We try to mitigate certain aspects of what could be termed as pollution. We refer to it as water runoff or stormwater management or silting mitigation. Some of those concerns are already baked into our ordinances. And they have to do with setback from the water, which you have to have 40 feet, and that includes all appurtenances. We enforce that rather stringently. And another component of that would be if you're building within 300 feet of the water, you have to have, during construction, a sedimentation plan. So you're not, as part of the construction polluting the water in some way from the construction side. So all these things are already baked into our current processes. Some people would like to see that loosened. Some people would like to see, certain setbacks increased. It was proposed to be 70 feet. And that, as it applies to property owner rights, is that I buy a piece, and we're on waterfront again, if I buy a piece of waterfront property and you say 70-foot setback, that might limit my ability to build on that property. My expectation of usage has now been diminished, and so we hear those concerns.
And that's the tension between private property rights and the quote, common good here.
And there's some tension there. Mm-hmm. I mean, we hear both sides of the issue, and we're certainly sensitive to that. I would add, by the way, I mentioned I've lived here 35 years, and I built a house on the water in 1981. Well, that was just after, in the building process and leading up to the permitting process, that was changed. We didn't used to have 40-foot setbacks. Now, I would add that the reason it was changed was not for environmental concerns. The reason it was changed was for aesthetics. And up at Priest Lake, there was a couple property owners that were unhappy with someone building a house closer to the water than theirs and blocking their view. So that aesthetics issue led to a setback requirement. And so people that say, well, that's there for environmental reasons. That's not the reason it was initially put in. So,
but it did have the benefit.
It did have a benefit.
To the environmental
water, concern.
Runoff questions. Yeah.
Opportunities for vegetative barriers and so forth. So that's a little bit of the history on some of that. But all of these things, all of these environmental concerns are baked in.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's take it a little step further about what we can do with planning. And I guess the question would be, should we use planning to guide development in ways that, let's say, the majority, hopefully the large majority of people agree to? And my thought here is a planning goal I think that the county embraced at one point was to have building codes that maintain the rural character of Bonner County, because our residents say, hey, we like the rural character of our county. And one way to do that is by having planning that encourages areas of high-density development, cities, to encourage high-density development to happen in certain areas, but to maintain, you know, large lot sizes for rural parts of the county. What's your view on how planning should be used that way, just to reflect the it's kind of an aesthetic question about the way our county should develop?
I would hearken back to an earlier statement I made about 63% of Bonner County not being developed. And those lands, I mean, we're familiar with some of the...
Because they're federal or state lands.
Federal, yeah. State, or yeah. BLM, or BLM, are scattered, right, all over the county. Mm-hmm. All over. There's a patchwork of those lands. Some BLM abutting state land, abutting IDL land. So in a rural sense, in terms of how you perceive the county looking, there's so much property that is not going to be built on that people look at it in terms of, you know, the cities, the municipalities, Sandpoint being, I guess, probably something that you could, is readily available for you to compare to. And they look at areas of the county up north of Priest River, down south towards Blanchard or out in Vay or Sagal. Those areas are not going to ever look like Sandpoint, because you can't build on a majority of that land. If you look at the patchwork quilt of federal, state, and lands out there, the rural character, by and large, is not going to change.
It's going to be protected by virtue of the fact we have a lot of public land.
Just by virtue of public land. Yeah. Now, we get into the discussion of services. The only way that you're going to have high-density multifamily dwellings is with services. Well, outside of the municipalities, Sandpoint being one, there are no municipal services. There are isolated sewer districts like up at Priest Lake and so forth that have taken that on, and owners have come together to finance those so that that they do comply with some regulations concerning sewage and so forth, and protect the environment. But by and large, we don't have sewer systems in the middle of A. We don't have sewer systems in huge areas north of Priest River. So how do we put high-density multifamily dwellings there and concentrate it? That is one view of how we solve, the housing issue in terms of affordability. It's the only way, and that was baked into our current housing comp plan, was one sentence. It said the solution to the high cost of housing is high-density multifamily units. Well, I don't know how you're going to do that in the middle of the county. So that brings up, what's a good minimum lot size? Well, to somebody who's got 10 acres and wants to break it into 2.5s, it would that be a reasonable expectation? If someone wants to split their property because they want their kids to have part of it, is that a reasonable expectation? So we get down to minimum lot size, and I'm sensitive to that issue. You know, I hear both sides of the issue in terms of neighbors saying, well, I've got 40 acres. I don't want a bunch of 5 acres near me, you know.
And that's the tension there.
Then that's the tension. Right. And that's the tension there. So I guess that falls under our comp plan and zoning laws. It doesn't fall under our ordinances, although some of our ordinances support that. But a lot of our ordinances are, building side, or Title 11, Title 12, have to do with setbacks, have to do with, trying to ensure that when you do build, that you're not, infringing on your neighbor's rights, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. either through proximity or, you're not building too close to a road, mm-hmm. so that our road department has a problem with maintaining that mm-hmm. road. Mm-hmm. So,
or too close to the neighbor's lot
exactly.
boundary.
Yeah, uh-huh. Exactly.
I'm not up to speed on the county comp plan, but do you, and I know that there a lot of work went into coming up with the comp plan. Do you feel that the goals of the comp plan are something that you support?
Well, I support we're required to have a comp plan. So, that being said, state statute also defines what what needs to be in a comp plan, and then says at the bottom in a caveat that you can add more things if you so desire. For instance, they added the airport. It's now required that all counties have include the airport in their comp plan, or in our case, we have two airports. But I think that when the comp plan, the current comp plan, was put into effect in 08, 07, 08, we're taking a look at it, and you know, by taking a backwards, did this thing really work? Did it work as it was envisioned at the time? What was the reasoning behind it? One of the things that drives this equation that I don't think is being mentioned is that the average cost of a house in Bonner County is $50,000 more than it is in Kootenai County. And Kootenai County, it's 188,000. Up here, it's 238,000. When we get to business development, when we get to trying to, we have an economic development corporation that's trying to bring business into this county so that our sons and daughters don't have to move out to North Dakota to find a job, where are they going to live? When you have businesses busing employees from Kootenai County, from Post Falls and Hayden Lake, because they can't afford to live here, what drives that equation? We think part of the components of the comp plan that we have currently in place are drivers in terms of driving up the cost of housing. So how can we mitigate that, or at least we're not going to drive it all the way back down, but it's certainly slow that. And so that isn't discussed, and that's a huge thing right now, as we hear it from the businesses.
Getting employees and that the fact that our cost of living is high enough, that makes it tough for employees that are paid at the lower end of the scale to live here even.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so we hear it from the businesses. So we look at it not only from an environmental standpoint, from a property rights standpoint, but we look at it from how does the comp plan and our zoning laws affect the cost of housing.
How can we foster affordable housing
exactly.
for the workforce?
Out in the county.
Yes.
Because, mm-hmm. you know, you take a look at Sandpoint, they're pretty much built out. Mm-hmm. The only place you're going to really build is out in the county, where 72% of our population lives.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's amazing how quick this hour is going by, Todd. And again, this is the KRFY Morning Show with Chris and Susie, and our guest is Todd Sudik, Bonner County Commissioner. We're talking about planning department and planning and zoning issues in Bonner County.
And the reason we invited you in, Todd, is to kind of clarify some of the controversy that's out there right now with some of the changes that the commissioners brought in. And I think you've addressed a lot of that in the giving an overview of the scope of responsibility and of the commissioners and how they interact and work with the commission, the planning commission. So that has been helpful. What would you, Chris, do you have another question from one of our listeners?
Well, actually, I would be, if we got a few minutes left, there's been a big, just in the last few days, a big story pop up about the Clagstone Meadows conservation easement. And it was kind of a fast-moving story because it didn't even come on my radar until early this week. There's been a deal in the works for quite some time to fund a conservation easement that will keep the property, which is in southern Bonner County, undeveloped and in timberland for the Stimson Lumber Company, which owns that property. Can you bring us up to speed where we're at right now? Because I know you had a hearing on this just yesterday, and then also as well yesterday the state legislature's the Senate JFAC committee approved funding for to let that deal go forward. So what's happened there, and what's the county's position on it?
Well, I can only speak for myself in terms of our position, but I would like to give you a little bit of history, because there's also been some misunderstanding, I guess, of where the process was. In 2009, 2010, the owners of the property down at Clagstone, former Clagstone Ranch, came to Bonner County and wanted to have a planned unit development of 1,200 homes down there and two golf courses. So that went through the planning and zoning process. That was approved by planning and zoning, and that was approved at the commissioner level to for a 1,200-unit development down there.
A very large development.
A large development, yeah. Okay. In 2014, the owners of the property came to the county and had not started the development process yet, but wanted an extension on that planned unit development, which they were granted. So with that in mind, what started down there was a change in the owners' minds about what they wanted to do with the property for whatever reason. You know, it's a business decision. It's a private property. And they decided that they would want to sell it into a conservation easement. Now, they started that process. Where it exactly started, I can't tell you. But certainly IDL was involved in it. Fish and Game were involved in it. There was monies that came to the state that had to be approved at the state level to be used. Throughout any of this, the county was not brought in on it. Now, the total area down there is 18,000 acres. I've heard and seen, actually, in government documents, varying degrees of acreage, but I guess one that sticks out is around 12,000 acres that would be put in a conservation easement. We knew nothing about it. When you get that large of an area within the county, which is going to impact the county in several different ways, the county would like to have some input on it, or at least be aware of it, and if we have concerns, be able to express those. We were not brought in, and we were not allowed that process. And so we've had mea culpas from all parties involved. That they bypassed us, I guess, didn't include us, didn't inform us. And so we found out at the last minute about this, and we had some concerns. We hadn't had a chance to thoroughly vet it. Our Natural Resource Committee, which is a county-appointed group that reviews these types of things, hadn't had an opportunity to thoroughly look at it. Initially, we couldn't get documents on it. They were marked confidential, and through a FOIA process, we finally did get the deed document, which in the deed in paragraph 1.3 says you've got to coordinate with the county, basically. That wasn't done. We couldn't get the public access management plan until last Thursday. So when somebody comes to me and says, well, what other information do you need in order to, you know, either support thumbs up or say you really don't want this, thumbs down, which I haven't done either. I've said I don't have enough information to make that determination at this time. I'm not supporting it because I don't have that. You have to have an opportunity to read those documents, to evaluate them, to let the Natural Resource Committee look at them, and we weren't afforded that opportunity. So I guess from my position, then I say, look, we would not want that opportunity. Now, in terms of passing JFAC passing it or the House passing the funding, you know, that's a political decision down in Boise. We really have no input on that other than what we did say, which I said was we would like an opportunity to be part of the process. We have tax dollars that come in from there. How is that going to be affected long run? You know, tax dollars affect our schools, our EMS, our fire, and the county. So those are the things that we look at. And plus, how does it compare to our comp plan? Speaking of our comp plan, you know, where does it fit in? I think there's a certain amount of property owner rights. We understand.
And that would be the question.
Yeah, there's a certain...
Stimson wants this deal. It's their property.
Exactly. But, you know, property owner rights aren't pure property owner rights, as you pointed out before. Mm-hmm. Property owner rights in Bonner County, for instance, are subject to setbacks, are subject to roads, are subject to other public easements, so that when you look at any property owner, We would like to be able to take a look at it in terms of how it will affect the county. And this could be huge. It could be, you know, something that, you know, is actually good in the long run. But not having that input, we not having had a chance to fully vet it, we don't have that knowledge to be able to say one way or the other.
But I believe on Tuesday the commission did say, well, we'll withdraw our objection to the deal.
We didn't. What we did was we withdrew a letter that was signed by Commissioner Bailey and myself expressing concerns. There was some question, very gray area in terms of Idaho public meeting law, where we both signed it. Did we violate Idaho public meeting law?
Because that constituted a
two commissioners.
A quorum,
yeah, but we didn't make a decision on it, and there was no decision made. There was no. It was just an opinion. But in a broader sense, we looked at it was a modicum of caution and said, better that we withdraw the letter from the standpoint of the letter, not from the standpoint of any opinions addressed in it.
Okay. Well,
we could go on, couldn't we? Yeah. It's been informative, and we, again, really appreciate Todd Zudyk, Bonner County Commissioner, for your coming in today and sifting through some of the questions and concerns and
of course,
illuminating.
We didn't ask every question.
No,
there's ton more to come.
Sounds like we'll have to have you back.
Yeah. Well, we do like to keep. You have the commissioners come in periodically and fill us in what's going on with the county.
And I think we should, you know, we get to, I guess, answer some questions that are direct and also at least give a different perspective.
Yeah, we'll give you rationale behind the decisions you're making.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it's been very helpful, so we certainly appreciate it, and we hope our listeners have been listening. You can also hear this podcast at krfy.org later in the day. A couple things. We have on next Tuesday's morning show, we have Garden Talk again with Emily Levine from Red Wheelbarrow Produce, Pat Wentworth from the Sandpoint Community Garden, and we'll have Dwayne Church from the Seed Library at the Bonner County Library. So that is.
And are
next.
We talking yet about future changes to morning
show? Well, we have at. Sure, we can. We have about half a minute to say about that. But we are. Proposing and tentatively moving to a Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. And Chris and I will be moving to Wednesday.
Wednesday, yes. And so we'll actually have the morning show 3 days a week. Mm-hmm. And that's directly the result of the fact there's so much going on in this town. We've had a lot of folks that do want to come on the air, talk about everything from county politics to city, what's going on with the city, to lots of policy questions, but also what the nonprofit groups are up to, and
lifestyle in our community,
right. Arts,
hiking, birding, gardening.
There's so much to talk about in our little town that always has something going on. That we're going to be expanding the morning show to a third day a week.
And you can go to our Facebook page and like us, and you'll get updates on who we're having in the next, I would say, month and a half. On Wednesday, Chris and I are going to be focusing on the elections with those that are candidates on the ballots.
The contested primary races, we're going to have the candidates in to talk about those. So we're going to maintain our role as a font of information for the community.
And we hope everyone has a great day. Again, thanks, Todd and Chris. Hope you have a good day.
All right, bye now.
This is Simon and Garfunkel, Homeward Bound.